Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in to a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. And this is part two of our interview with former BYU quarterback great and current private quarterback coach, John Beck. Now make sure you go back and listen to part one if you haven't done so right now. John talked about how he left professional football to be a well-regarded quarterback coach and how he went from a scrawny kid to being offered a scholarship at BYU. Now in part two, we're going to find out what it was like for John to play at BYU during its down years, finally turning the program around and navigating the National Football League while feeling God's guidance through it all.
When you got to BYU and you were finally there, it was not the greatest start, and it was a very tumultuous time inside the program. Can you explain sort of what it was like to be at BYU when you first got there?
Well, you know, when I did accept the offer, it was months later. And, you know, you accept the offer and it's to Lavelle Edwards. And it's to Robbie Bosco, and it's to all these guys that like are a part of what your memory is of the QB factory and what made it great. And you want to be the next guy in line. And I remember getting the word that Lavelle was no longer going to be the head coach, but that the scholarship would still be there. And so I remember watching intently, well, who's this next coach going to be? Before my mission, there was rumors that it might be Gary Croton. And so I would watch a bunch of Chicago Bears games, wondering, could it be this guy? What does his offense look like? And so you just, you know, you wonder. And on my mission, I was actually recruited more on my mission, the back half of my mission, to the point where I remember having to go talk to my mission president, like, you know, this is getting tough because I get lots of emails from these other coaches, you know, Arizona State, UCLA, Washington, University of Miami, like all these schools that I'm like, man, like this is, you know, this is making it tough. And they were pushing really, really hard. And they were actually going and meeting with my parents while I was on my mission. And my parents would write me back, man, I met this coach, great guy. I met this coach, great guy. Like, it was tricky because also BYU had that amazing 2001 season. And I remember getting the newspaper article sent to me. And you're thinking, this is awesome. Like, Gary Croton is just lighting the world on fire. BYU is amazing. Like, this is going to be so fun. And then I remember coming home at the back end of that 2002 season, and I came to my recruiting visit, and I believe they were playing, I think it was Wyoming. It was either Wyoming or New Mexico at home, and I remember they lost. And I remember just the feeling of like, whoa, this is very different from the BYU that I was, you know, thinking I was going to. And my recruitment had reopened, and I was supposed to go to Arizona State and Washington, and you know, they would call me like, how'd your visit with BYU go? I know it's really difficult to get return missionaries to go somewhere else, but, you know, we're going to push hard. And I just remember that feeling of like, it still feels right. It feels like this is where I'm supposed to be. And so despite what it may look like, I'm going to go and I'm going to try to do everything I can to help. And then I remember like the 2003 season happens, and I had never been a part of a football season like that. And, you know, I'm out there playing as a rookie. I mean, I almost said rookie, but a freshman. And I played like a freshman that hadn't played football in 3 years, right? Like I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off and I'm throwing balls I probably shouldn't. And, you know, you kind of know the offense, but you don't know it like somebody that's been in it a while. And I had no college football before that. Some guys will go for a year and then go on their mission. Some guys will come off their mission and redshirt where they get to sit and watch the program and participate as a scout team. Like I had none of that. The first game I ever stood on a BYU sideline for, I played in and threw an interception in. I mean, it was just wild how quickly things were going. And then I'm the starting quarterback, and I don't think I'd ever lost back-to-back football games in my life. And all of a sudden, my first two starts, I lose them. And this may sound funny, but I actually called a bunch of the seniors and I apologized. But the team had lost two games. After that second loss, I just reached out to the guys that I felt were captains. And I was like, hey, man, I'm sorry that my play hasn't helped our team win. And you know, I feel responsible and I'll do everything I possibly can to get this thing turned around and get us on the right track. And, you know, I put a lot on my shoulders, and looking back now, I just kind of laugh like, you know, accountability was instilled in me and responsibility was instilled in me. And, you know, what wasn't instilled in me was the part of like, dude, you have hardly played any football. Like, it's, you're probably not going to be playing that great. But it meant a lot to me to try to turn the program around, and it was tough. Like, I'm not going to lie, when Gary Croton got fired, like, I felt largely responsible because I had only really known up to my life, playing, working hard, putting in extra work, and things going well, right? And playing well. And so to put in that same work, to put in that same level of commitment, and to show up early and ask your quarterback coach, can I meet in the mornings extra? And can I watch more tape? And can you give me tape to take home? And, you know, telling people on the weekends, hey, I'm not going to hang out this weekend. I'm going to stay home and I'm going to invest and watch some tape. And to do all of those things and not have winning or other things go well, it was tough. And to see a man lose his job that I had a lot of respect for. And, you know, still to this day, Gary's the guy that gave me my chance there. And there were probably some games he could have benched me in, and he didn't. And he hung in there with me. And a lot of my learning experiences I went through with him allowed me to be a better player later on. But to see somebody's, you know, lose their job and feel like I wish I could have done better for the man was hard. And then you go into 2005, and I just remember this feeling of like, man, everybody's new. Bronco's a new head coach. Brandon Doman is learning coaching. Like, Robert and I is learning offensive coordinator. Like, I'm trying to prove myself now in my junior year. And, you know, I mean, and then we played great against TCU on offense and we lose 51-50. I remember just thinking like, I had dreamt about throwing 500 yards, 5 touchdowns, and then I do it and we lose. Like, it's just, you know, it was tough. It was a tough time for BYU and tough time for me to wade through all of that. And a lot of great lessons though, that I learned through those difficulties. And, you know, you hear that thing like, man, I wouldn't change anything. Like, you know, yeah, I'd change the winning and the losing, but the like lessons learned are great. Like, I'd love to go back in time and be like, man, we won 10 games every single season, 10 plus games every season I was there. That, you know, that wasn't my story, but, you know, I love the lessons. I love the late nights of going to the quarterback room by myself and just staring in front of the TV, like the computer there, and being like, what could I have done to do a better job right here? What could have happened? What, you know, you go through all of those things. I love those moments. Those are defining moments in my life and in my career and my journey and who I am as a player and a person. And, you know, I do cherish those moments. I get asked the question, like, do you love, you know, the stadium? Do you miss the stadium? Like, I'll tell you the truth. Like, when I walk around the practice facility and when I walk into the quarterback room, that's the part that taps on my heart, because those were those moments of the hours upon hours of trying to find a way to get things right. And that's the part that is the most, you know, special to me, those areas.
I think the longer that Bronco is away from BYU, I think the more people realize his importance and what he actually did for BYU at a really important time. You know, you had mentioned you're recruited and offered by Lavelle. When you actually come here, Gary's the head coach. And then Bronco ultimately follows Gary after Gary is let go. And Bronco then begins this stretch for BYU where I think the word that just comes to mind is consistency. What was that time like, and what did Bronco bring to BYU and to you?
Well, the first thing that I remember was the unveiling of the new old uniforms, right? Like, I still remember I went to the press conference and I remember the feeling of it's back. Like, that logo that meant something to me as a kid, the logo that meant something to me, you know, my teenage years, like all those holiday bowls I went to, all the quarterbacks I looked up to, like, oh, it's back. And that, so to me, that was really cool. There was also some people brought back to the program that had been a part of great things. You know, Robert and I was a part of great teams. Brandon Doman was a part of great team. Like, there were people in it that were part of great teams. Also, the practice structure changed. The idea and the feeling of practice changed in a way. There was a feeling of a culture and what it needed to be that was familiar to me because of the culture, like I talked about, from the Mountain View Toros that I played with, right? Like, I had only known winning with a certain formula and culture. And like, and I don't want to say anything like the culture or formula like was so bad. Like, I don't like when people do that about like Gary's time there. Like, you know, there's always things that when things don't go right, you can look back and say this needed to be improved, or these things should have been better. Like, and I'm sure Gary recognizes that as well, like looking back now. But nobody's out there to just do bad and ruin a program. Like, that's not like, there was a lot of hard work invested and a lot of people trying their best. And at the end of the day, it didn't work. And you can look at it and say, what can we learn from that? What needs to be fixed? And let's work that direction. I appreciated that Bronco, I think he recognized when he was in it, these things can't remain and these things need to change. And I'm going to do that. And I loved that. And I loved that I got to be a part of the flywheel process, right? Like, the initial push is the hardest push. And from where we fell to where we were trying to get back to, that was going to take a big push. And I love that I get to be a part of that initial push on the flywheel. And so I think when I look to where like BYU is, and I love that Kalani's there and I love what's going on, like, man, there was a push made by Bronco in that 2005-2006 seasons that, like, I still believe so much of that flywheel of that initial push is rolling now. And it's cool to be a part of that. And I kind of look at that also like my mission in Portugal. Those that serve in Europe understand how difficult the push is at times there, with the work of the gospel and with sharing the message of the gospel, especially because some of the mindsets and, you know, like in Portugal, the church is still very new. Like when I got there in the, you know, 2000, the church had really only been in Portugal for a little more than 20 years. And there was laws that limited, you know, like what your faith could be. And so it's the difficulty, it's the flywheel there, even in Europe, you know, the push of the gospel. And so like, I look at things in my life that for whatever reason, whether it's the Lord's hand and timing in my life or, you know, happenstance or whatever you want to call it, I have seen the initial push and the beginnings of the flywheel effect of being in a tough spot and climbing out of it in many areas of my life, both the things that I choose to do professionally or personally, just all of that stuff. And because of that, I appreciate those moments.
Coming up after the break, John discusses the fantastic 2006 BYU football season and, of course, the most important lessons he's learned from football. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Hey, Cougar fans, Jason Shepherd here to talk about one of our other great BYU Radio podcasts, Big Stories. It's a show about amazing stories from Big 12 schools and beyond. Host Cleon Wall traveled to places like Tempe, Lawrence, Orlando, and other cities to find real-life tales from BYU's opponents, like Baylor grad Jimmy Durrell, who moved back to an impoverished Waco neighborhood to help those who couldn't help themselves. Cleon has plenty of stories just like that through the football and basketball seasons. Don't miss out. Find Big Stories on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. This is part two of our interview with former BYU quarterback, John Beck.
Because of the early lean years when you got to BYU, how rewarding and how much fun was 2006 for you and your teammates?
I mean, it was awesome. It was a tough start, though. You know, I still remember standing on that field in Arizona when the game ended. I was worried I was going to be told I had a broken foot. I really thought I played the back end of that game with a broken foot. And when we lost that game, I did not think our season was going to start that way, losing to Arizona. And then I just remember walking back to the locker room and trying to get my cleats and stuff off. And I was standing by Jason Beck. And I just remember, like, he's like, what do you think? And it was that feeling of like, I don't even know if I want the doctors to look at this because I'm so worried they're going to tell me it's broken and that I might not be playing. And so it was a tough start. And then, you know, having to go through the process of MRIs and being in a boot and trying to make it up to campus and trying to walk up the stairs of my apartment and having my wife help me down the stairs and playing against Boston College and, getting hit a few times, and like I had a shot where I'm not supposed to feel much and it's killing me. And like we lose that game and just being like, man, 1-2 start. Like I did not see this coming and I'm hobbling around at practice. That I did not see. But the way that we got on track after that, and you know, like I wonder, sometimes early losses shape a team, you know, and you know, there were some games later, the TCU game that stands out to me, right? The Utah game, certain games stand out to me that like, you know, you wonder, what if we had started 4-0, 5-0, you know, like what if we had done those things? Like, I also remember when Bronco came to me for the Utah State game and said, I think it's in the best interest of this team to have you not play. Like, I just remember also being like, my initial thing was no, like I am playing. Like, I'm not going to play in a game my senior year. But like, you know, Utah State hadn't won a game in like 12 games. And like, what game is the most important? TCU. And I just remember being like, I'm standing on the sideline for a game to put myself in a better position for another one. Like, you just don't think those things are going to happen. But what if I had taken some weird hit against Utah State? What if my ankles didn't feel a little bit better for that TCU game? What if we hadn't learned some great lessons during those first two games? Coaching staff did some things a little bit different. I think in the beginning of the season, we approached the Arizona game like maybe we can take this approach with a game plan and be this style. And man, no, that's not us. We need to do something different. Like sometimes those things in the beginning of the season really shape what your team is at the end. Not just players, but coaches and their play calls and the way that they see the team. And so, you know, the cool part for me was, you never know how stories start. You never know how stories end. I feel really blessed that not just me, but all of my teammates, we got to end it in a really storybook style. Like, I mean, there is no cooler finish to the game than that Utah game. There's no cooler feeling than what I got to experience after that play. And then to go and play in a bowl game and to win it the way that we did. I mean, that, you know, that was so cool. And so I'm always grateful for the experience. It's really gratitude, not necessarily like a feeling of like, I'll always get to celebrate that. And, you know, and just like, oh, they should always cheer for us or something. It's like, I'm grateful that our group of guys, coaching staff, players, that we actually get to share those memories of a real cool ending. Because sometimes you can have a great season, but that doesn't mean the ending gets to be great like that. Like our ending to our story for especially us guys that came in 2003 and, you know, the guys that redshirted in 2002. From where we were in 03, 04 to where we finished in 06, that's the part that is just so awesome that we get to share that forever.
We certainly are not going to gloss over Beck to Harlene, one of the most iconic plays in BYU football history, and personally one of my favorite sports memories of all time. It's one of two of my favorite sports memories during my entire life. But I want to ask you, not specifically about the play, but you touched on it just a second ago. Can you appreciate how iconic it is for BYU fans? Because I'm assuming you can't go anywhere without somebody asking you about that. Can you appreciate what that play means in the history of BYU football?
You know, in the moment, it meant a lot to our team and to me personally. And you don't understand then that, like, how that's going to carry on for 20 years, you know? Yes, that is the play that random people all over the place, no matter where I'm at. Oh, man, here's where I was. Oh, man, here's how old I was. Oh, here is what happened. Or this, I mean, just the stories upon stories. Or like you said, people will be like, that is my all-time favorite sports play. You know, it's really cool. I mean, I don't know the names of the two guys that did the call of the Mountain West thing, but like that keeps getting sent to me. They must have just done it like this last week. And like years ago, somebody did like a Lego one. And I mean, you know, like, and there's a book that's in our house that the guy that made the book sent it to us. And my kids remember it. And here's the other funny thing. To this day, when I go play catch with my kids, here or there, one of my kids reenacts it. And I'm always on the Johnny Harlene end, right? Like they're the end. Oh yeah, I'm Johnny. Or, you know, Dad, you got to catch it on your knees or something like that. You know, like I'm on the receiving end. I would have never known back then that I would have these boys running around and they want to relive this, my side, you know? It's just cool, you know, and I'm forever grateful for what that meant for our team, for all of the guys involved. One of my favorite things, when I watch that play, if somebody shows it to me or if it, you know, I always love seeing my teammates' reactions. Like, I love seeing Ray Fanga throw his helmet. I love seeing Jake Caressa's reaction. I love seeing Travis Bright. Like, I love the one of Bronco and McKay Jacobson and those guys on the sideline. Because, I mean, this is how I feel as a quarterback. Like, you don't just do all of that hard work for you. You do all of that hard work for the group, for what everybody involved, what you want everybody to be a part of and feel. Like, I fully understood what I hoped BYU could be, but I also fully understood I had to bring other people. Like, with every practice that I put in on the field, what good is it just me out there throwing? Like, I got to have everybody, right? Like, and so because of that, I love to see my teammates' reactions. And I've always felt that way about it. I love that that's a part of my life. The memory of seeing Johnny is always there. You know, the memory of the feeling right afterwards. The funny memory is that feeling of I wasn't quite sure where he was sliding on his knees. And the split second feeling of like if he's on the 1 yard line, that was a real feeling. I did not know where he slid and I was worried for a split second. Was he out of the end zone? Those things are always going to stay with me. But it's been really cool just all the other perspectives of other people's experiences. And like I said, like my kids, little did I know that that would be the experience of my life.
John, I want to ask you one more question. And we've touched on your faith a couple of times. And look, Heavenly Father puts things in our way to help us grow. And, you know, whether it was, you know, when you first got to BYU and things weren't going great, or maybe some of the people talking to you in high school saying that your dreams of playing, you know, college football or in the NFL, you should throw those away. You know, you've had to sort of maneuver through some of the things in life that can trip people up. And I know maybe the NFL career wasn't exactly what you would have wanted it to be. What role did your faith play in helping you through those difficult moments of your life that are still going on to this very day?
Yeah. So I feel impressed to answer this question this way and to bring in some of my NFL career. My whole life, I feel like it was easy for people to doubt or to look at me and see a scrawny, freckle-faced kid with big dreams and be like, nah, kid, that probably ain't going to happen. And my response was always to believe, to have a belief in myself, to have a belief in what my dad taught me, my parents taught me. And I'm kind of talking about this in terms of like being driven, going after goals, confidence in yourself, fundamental principles to success, like putting in the extra work, looking for ways to see how other people are succeeding and adopt those into your life. Gravitate towards the things that make a difference. Like, how do you be the 1%? If less than 1% of the people playing high school football make it to college, what is it that you need to be doing to be that less than 1%? And same in college. If only 1% make it to the NFL, then same in the NFL. If only a certain percent, like, what are those things? Find those things. And so my whole life was geared about that. Find those things, believe in those things, and go after them. And so to have a journey where from a young age, I did those things and I felt like high school, like it ended great. You know, junior year, I threw one touchdown pass. I remember going to the mall because they would put out this magazine of the top football players in the state of Arizona, the top teams. And I would go get it every year because I was so interested in who are the top 25 quarterbacks this year. And so going into my senior year, I would hope that I would be on that list. And I remember I wasn't. And I still remember like being like, all right, well, I've been in this chef spot before. Like, I don't care what a magazine thinks of me. I don't care about that stuff. I'm just going to put my nose down and work. That's who I am. I was raised to be a worker, and I'm going to do that. I'm just going to keep working. And so I took that same approach to college, right? And I was so excited to come to BYU, so excited to start that first game as a freshman against Stanford. And, you know, I thought we were going to win. I thought we were going to win it all the games I started in. I thought we were going to win the game against USC my sophomore year. That's to this day, that is my most favorite game going into. I absolutely loved preparing for the number one team in the country to come to Provo, because that is what Ty Detmer did when Miami came to town. And I had always dreamed of a moment like that. And so to this day, my most favorite game in college to prepare for was that one. You know, and the difficulties that you go through, but the belief of all those principles I talked about, that if I just stick to those principles and believe and work and just tirelessly go after it, good things can happen. And to have them go the way that they did at BYU, it just gave me more confidence that, like, that is the path, that is the way. And so when I entered the NFL and I end up on the Miami Dolphins and we go 1-15 and I become the starting quarterback, we're either like 0-9, 0-10, and we're going on the road to play in Philly that had the number one defense. And I know that next week we're going to go play Monday night against the Steelers against the number two defense. I remember thinking, like, you know, this is not a good situation. This is almost a recipe for disaster, but I'm going to go out. I'm going to give it my best. And regardless of what happens at the end of the day, I'm going to stick to these things, these principles that have served me well. And I'm going to do that. And I tried to stick to those principles as best as possible throughout my NFL career. And when I got the other opportunity with the Shanahans, it felt familiar. Like, I've been on this road before. I've been the junior in high school. I go back to Pop Warner. I've been the kid that was told, oh, we already have a quarterback for the local team. You're going to have to find another Pop Warner team. And you find the Sonobres. And it was a great blessing in my life. And, you know, no one's going to think you're going to be the Mountain View Toros starting quarterback. Like, look, you're the scrawny little dude. Mountain View's a great school. And it worked out great. You know, BYU, I'm sure there were a lot of people ready to toss me out the stadium those first few years, being like, man, Beck sucks. Like, this guy ain't going to do it. Like, and it worked out, you know, and I'm grateful. And I'm going to apply that in the NFL. And when the Redskins situation came, I still remember driving down to Ashburn to meet Mike Shanahan for the first time, getting there, having the conversation that we had in his office. And I won't go into details, but that belief of, like, it's going to happen here. Like, I believe it, and I'm going to do all the things I possibly can. And when people laughed at me for the way I approached my, like, preparation and work during the holdout or the lockout, you know, why does this guy think he's going to be the starting quarterback? I felt familiar in those shoes before, and I'm going to believe in myself. And when it all went to crap, and I remember driving back on the Beltway, and when you play for the Redskins and you drive back to Ashburn, you pass the temple, the Washington, D.C. temple. And at night, the spires shine bright. And I can remember driving in the car with my wife and my family and just remembering, like, I love ball. I love working for ball. I love everything that it entails. But that is not what my life is about. And there are reminders in your life about why you're here. And there are reminders in your life about the bigger things of life. And I got to experience that with my family, who I cherish more than anything. And I was reminded of all the things I've been through throughout my life as, like, a young deacon, a teacher, a priest, a missionary, the lessons I've learned, the times that you have to go back and say, all right, where am I at in life? Where am I at with the Lord? Where am I at with my priorities? Am I seeing things the way that I need to see them? Am I holding to the rod? Have I, you know, can I be on track better? What about my habits? What are my habits like? What's my prayer habit like? Are they sincere? Do I feel close to my Father in heaven when I pray? What are my study habits like of the scriptures? I've tried to do a good job of checking myself with those things in my life the same way that I would my aspirations in football. When I had to check myself as a quarterback, what are my drops like? What's my timing like? Like, what are my throws like? How's my body? What's my nutrition like? What's my mental state like? Where's my confidence at? Where are all these things? The same way I would do that, I had to do that with my spiritual life. And, you know, life always throws curveballs. I've had to go through some extremely difficult things in my life that they feel like your insides get absolutely torn apart. And I won't say I've never questioned the love of my Father in heaven, never questioned, you know, why my Savior, why my Father in heaven would have me go through these things. When somebody would say to me, well, John, it all happens for a reason. Like, I don't know if I fully believe that everything happens for a reason. I actually know I don't. I don't believe that everything happens because it was supposed to. There are too many things that I've experienced in my life or that people that I love dearly have experienced in their life that I don't think our Father in Heaven sat upstairs and said, well, I'm going to have that happen to them. I think we all participate in this life here and we bump into each other and we bump into each other's mistakes and we bump into the things that because this world has natural consequences or natural things or natural accidents, we take part in it. And sometimes really, really tough things happen. And when those tough things happen, where do we look? Where do we turn to? Because I fully believe that the person that we turn to, he can make the most out of everything that we go through. That is why I think things happen, to see where we turn, because the master teacher, the person that loves us and knows us so well, can teach us what he needs to teach us to get us to go through any experience we go through in life. I actually believe in so many circumstances, multiple things could happen to me. And if I turn to my Father in Heaven, whether it was failure or success, if I turn to him, he can help me learn the things I need to learn too. But I do believe that sometimes, for whatever reason, the pains, the anguish, the hurt, the failures, all of those things somehow teach us the most. And I think it's because of where it drops us to and how it drops us to our knees and how it humbles us. And I actually heard a little thing. Bronco Mendenhall was on a podcast and he said it's in the moments that he sits in the stadiums after losses that he feels the closest to that feeling. And I can relate to that. It's the drives back to Ashburn, Virginia on the freeway after losing all your starts for the Washington Redskins when you really felt like things were going to go well and you see the temple that you feel those feelings. Most recently, it's the loss of my brother. You don't think you're going to get a phone call stepping out of your car to go to a football field to train a quarterback. That's going to tell you you lost your brother. Somebody that has been in my life, my whole life, got to be my teammate and roommate at BYU, probably has spent more time on practice fields than anybody else besides my dad because of all the time in baseball and football and all the sports we did. You just don't anticipate that. And you turn to your Father in Heaven and you turn to your Savior and you turn to the temple. And you turn to the scriptures. And I'm grateful that there's been people in my life that have been able to, because I think they're doing the same thing, that they feel prompted to reach out and they feel prompted to send me a text or give me a hug or just reiterate their faith in the gospel. And those things, man, they're tough. When it's family, it's so tough. But I know there's a way through it. I can feel my Father in Heaven's love through everything I've gone through, whether football related, life related, all of those things. I've always been able to feel my Father in Heaven's love. And because of that, I can feel my Savior's love. And because of that, my testimony of the atonement is just constantly strengthened. And I know I'm going to go through more difficulties. These difficulties don't end here. There's going to be ones that hit just as hard. And I just want to make sure I'm doing the things just like I did as a quarterback. I'm putting in the extra time. I'm preparing my son for his mission by read and preach my gospel like we just did a couple hours ago. I'm trying to stay true to my prayer, my scriptures, all those things, so that when those moments come, when the storms in my life hit me, that I turn to my rock and my foundation, and I just keep doing that over and over again.
John, thank you so much for being willing to share that story and to share your testimony. I really appreciate that specifically, but also appreciate you taking so much time today to do this. I really enjoyed this. I hope you did too. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks once again to my guest, John Beck. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.